Chapter 14. Hopeless to him dead. Do you understand me, love? Apostrophe. Her sister looked into her face, attentively. She seemed in doubt. I saw Mr. Warden, and confided in his honor, charged him with my secret, on the eve of his and my departure. He kept it. Do you understand me, dear? Apostrophe. Apostrophe. Grace looked confusedly upon her. She scarcely seemed to hear. My love, my sister. Apostrophe. Apostrophe. Said Marion, recall your thoughts a moment, listen to me. Do not look so strangely on me. There are countries, dearest, where those who would abjure a misplaced passion, or would strive, against some cherished feeling of their hearts and conquer it, retire into a hopeless solitude, and close the world against themselves, and worldly loves and hopes forever. When women do so, they assume that name which is so dear to you and me, and call each other sisters. But, there may be sisters, Grace, who, in the broad world out of doors, and underneath its free sky, and in its crowded places, and among its busy life, and trying to assist, and cheer it, and to do some good, learn the same lesson, and who, with hearts still fresh and young, and open to all happiness and means of happiness, can say the battle is long past, the victory long won. And such a one am I. You understand me now? Apostrophe. Apostrophe. Still she looked fixedly upon her, and made no reply. Oh Grace, dear Grace, apostrophe. Said Marion, clinging yet more tenderly and fondly to that breast from which she had been so long exiled, if you were not a happy wife and mother, if I had no little namesake here, if Alfred, my kind brother, were not your own fond husband, from whence could I derive the ecstasy I feel tonight? But, as I left here, so I have returned. My heart has known no other love, my hand has never been bestowed apart from it. I am still your maiden sister, unmarried, unbetrothed. Your own loving old Marion, in whose affection you exist alone, and have no partner, Grace. Apostrophe. Apostrophe. She understood her now. Her face relaxed. Sobs came to her relief. And falling on her neck, she wept and wept, and fondled her, as if she were a child again. When they were more composed, they found that the doctor, and his sister Good and Martha, were standing near at hand, with Alfred. This is a weary day for me, apostrophe. Said Good and Martha, smiling through her tears, as she embraced her nieces, for I lose my dear companion in making you all happy. And what can you give me, in return for my Marion? Apostrophe. Apostrophe. A converted brother, apostrophe. Said the doctor. That's something, to be sure, apostrophe. Retorted Aunt Martha, in such a farce as apostrophe. No, pray don't, apostrophe. Said the doctor penitently. Well, I won't, apostrophe. Replied Aunt Martha. But, I consider myself ill-used. I don't know what's to become of me without my Marion, after we have lived together half a dozen years. Apostrophe. You must come and live here, I suppose, apostrophe. Replied the doctor. We shan't quarrel now, Martha. Apostrophe. Or you must get married, and, apostrophe. Said Alfred. Indeed, apostrophe. Returned the old lady, I think it might be a good speculation, if I were to set my cap at Michael Warden, who, I hear, is come home much the better for his absence in all respects. But as I knew him, when he was a boy, and I was not a very young woman then, perhaps he mightn't respond. So I'll make up my mind to go, and live with Marion, when she marries, and until then, it will not be very long, I dare say, to live alone. What do you say, brother? Apostrophe. Apostrophe. I've a great mind to say it's a ridiculous world altogether, and there's nothing serious in it, apostrophe. Observed the poor old doctor. You might take 20 affidavits of it if you chose, Anthony, apostrophe. Said his sister, but nobody would believe you with such eyes as those. Apostrophe. It's a world full of hearts, apostrophe. Said the doctor, hugging his youngest daughter, and bending across her to hug Grace, for he couldn't separate the sisters. And a serious world, with all its folly, even with mine, which was enough to have swamped the whole globe. And it is a world on which the sun never rises, but it looks upon a thousand bloodless battles, that are some set off against the miseries and wickedness of battlefields. And it is a world we need, be careful how we libel, heaven forgive us, for it is a world of sacred mysteries, and its creator only knows what lies beneath the surface of his lightest image. You would not be the better pleased with my rude pen, if it dissected and laid open to your view the transports of this family, long severed and now reunited. Therefore, I will not follow the poor doctor through his humbled recollection of the sorrow he had had, when Marion was lost to him, nor will I tell how serious he had found that world to be, in which some love, deep anchored, is the portion of all human creatures, nor how such a trifle as the absence of one little unit in the great absurd account had stricken him to the ground, nor how, in compassion for his distress, his sister had, long ago, revealed the truth to him by slow degrees, and brought him to the knowledge of the heart of his self-banished daughter, and to that daughter's side. Nor how Alfred Heathfield had been told the truth to, in the course of, the then current year, and Marion had seen him, and had promised him, as her brother, that on her birthday, in the evening, Grace should know it from her lips at last. I beg your pardon, Doctor, said Mr. Snitchey, looking into the orchard, but have I liberty to come in? Without waiting for permission, he came straight to Marion, and kissed her hand, quite joyfully. If Mr. Cracks had been alive, my dear Miss Marion, said Mr. Snitchey, he would have had great interest in this occasion. It might have suggested to him, Mr. Alfred, that our life is not too easy perhaps. That, taken altogether, it will bear any little smoothing we can give it. But Mr. Cracks was a man who could endure to be convinced, sir. He was always open to conviction. If he were open to conviction, now, this is weakness. Mrs. Snitchey, my dear, at his summons that lady appeared from behind the door, you are among old friends. Mrs. Snitchey, having delivered her congratulations, took her husband aside. One moment, Mr. Snitchey, said that lady. It is not in my nature to rake up the ashes of the departed. No, my dear, returned her husband. Mr. Cracks is yes, my dear, he is deceased, said Snitchey. But I ask you if you recollect, pursued his wife, that evening of the ball? I only ask you that. If you do, and if your memory has not entirely failed you, Mr. Snitchey, and if you are not absolutely in your dotage, I ask you to connect this time with that to remember how I begged and prayed you, on my knees, upon your knees, my dear? Said Mr. Snitchey. Yes, said Mrs. Snitchey, confidently, and you know it to beware of that man, to observe his eye, and now to tell me, whether I was right, and whether at that moment he knew secrets which he didn't choose to tell. Mrs. Snitchey, returned her husband, in her ear, madam. Did you ever observe anything in my eye? No, said Mrs. Snitchey, sharply. Don't flatter yourself. Because, madam, that night, he continued, twitching her by the sleeve, it happens that we both knew secrets which we didn't choose to tell, and both knew just the same professionally. And so the less you say about such things the better, Mrs. Snitchey, and take this as a warning to have wiser and more charitable eyes another time. Miss Marion, I brought a friend of yours along with me. Here, mistress. Poor Clemency, with her apron to her eyes, came slowly in, escorted by her husband, the latter doleful with the presentiment that if she abandoned herself to grief, the nutmeg grater was done for. Now, mistress, said the lawyer, checking Marion as she ran towards her, and interposing himself between them, what's the matter with you? The matter? Cried poor Clemency. When, looking up in wonder, and in indignant remonstrance, and in the added emotion of a great roar from Mr. Britton, and seeing that sweet face so well remembered close before her, she stared, sobbed, laughed, cried, screamed, embraced her, held her fast, released her, fell on Mr. Snitchey, and embraced him much to Mrs. Snitchey's indignation, fell on the doctor and embraced him, fell on Mr. Britton and embraced him, and concluded by embracing herself, throwing her apron over her head, and going into hysterics behind it. A stranger had come into the orchard, after Mr. Snitchey, and had remained apart, near the gate, without being observed by any of the group, for they had little spare attention to bestow, and that had been monopolized by the ecstasies of clemency. He did not appear to wish to be observed, but stood alone, with downcast eyes, and there was an air of dejection about him, though he was a gentleman of a gallant appearance, which the general happiness rendered more remarkable. None but the quick eyes of Aunt Martha, however, remarked him at all, but, almost as soon as she espied him, she was in conversation with him. Presently, going to where Marion stood with Grace and her little namesake, she whispered something in Marion's ear, at which she started, and appeared surprised. But soon recovering from her confusion, she timidly approached the stranger, in Aunt Martha's company, and engaged in conversation with him too. Apostrophe Mr. Britton, apostrophe said the lawyer, putting his hand in his pocket, and bringing out a legal-looking document. While this was going on, I congratulate you. You are now the whole and sole proprietor of that freehold tenement, at present occupied and held by yourself as a licensed tavern, or house of public entertainment, and commonly called or known by the sign of the Nutmeg Grater. Your wife lost one house, through my client Mr. Michael Warden, and now gains another. I shall have the pleasure of canvassing you for the county, one of these fine mornings. Apostrophe, would it make any difference in the vote, if the sign was altered, sir? Apostrophe asked Britton. Not in the least, apostrophe replied the lawyer. Then, apostrophe said Mr. Britton, handing him back the conveyance, just clap in the words, and Thimble, will you be so good? And I'll have the two mottos painted up in the parlor instead of my wife's portrait. Apostrophe, and let me, apostrophe said a voice behind them, it was the stranger's Michael Warden's, let me claim the benefit of those inscriptions. Mr. Heathfield and Dr. Jeddler, I might have deeply wronged you both. That I did not, is no virtue of my own. I will not say, that I am 6 years wiser than I was, or better. But I have known, at any rate, that term of self-reproach. I can urge no reason why you should deal gently with me. I abused the hospitality of this house, and learnt by my own demerits, with a shame I never have forgotten, yet with some profit to, I would fain hope, from one, apostrophe he glanced at Marion, to whom I made my humble supplication for forgiveness, when I knew her merit and my deep unworthiness. In a few days I shall quit this place forever. I entreat your pardon. Do as you would be done by. Forget and forgive. Apostrophe, time from whom I had the latter portion of this story, and with whom I have the pleasure of a personal acquaintance of some 35 years duration, informed me, leaning easily upon his scythe, that Michael Warden never went away again, and never sold his house, but opened it afresh, maintained a golden means of hospitality, and had a wife, the pride and honor of that countryside, whose name was Marion. But, as I have observed that time confuses facts occasionally, I hardly know what weight to give to his authority. End of the Project Gutenberg text of The Battle of Life by Charles Dickens. Battle by Gutenberg edition.